Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Well, welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker with my co-host Stone Payton and Alan Dobrinsky. How you doing, Alan? He's working his mic.
I'm doing good. Sorry about that. You coughed me out hard because I usually leave my mic off.
That's all right. You got to remember, I include everybody here. This is a
thank you.
All-inclusive show, man. You got to be ready to play.
All right, I'm ready now.
Good. Longest intro we've ever had. That was a good minute and 20 seconds.
Well, I enjoyed listening to it, and I got to tell you, if that guy makes parole, we'll have him come in the studio and do it for real. But I thought the acoustics from the cell were great.
Nice.
But I've got disclosure envy. I want my own. I want something in there about, look, you can't pay any attention to what this redneck says, and if you act on the advice that you get from this show, it's on you.
Fault. Yeah, it's not
right,
his fault.
So I'm going to have my disclosure. I'm going to have one recorded, too.
You do that. We'll do it right after mine, and then we'll have 10 seconds.
Then we'll have to wake the guest up so they could do the show. All right.
That's right. That's right. So what have you been up to, Stone?
Well, I've been getting ready for Christmas, man. My wife is traveling. She's out in Houston doing her thing, and I've got all the Christmas errands. So I've been busy doing all the Christmas stuff. I put the Christmas tree in the foyer last night, and I got a whole bunch of errands right after the show. So I'm just neck deep in ho ho ho.
Yeah, same with me. My wife has been on me about putting the Christmas lights up. I was hanging a wreath on the Christmas windows, and our guest actually had an opportunity to see me up 20 feet up on a ladder.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it was wonderful, and I'm here to tell you about it. So that was a good sign, good sign. So I'm excited about today. We've got a guest with us, Randy Guy, and tell you a little bit about Biz Rocket Radio. You know, our show features many of the business owners and executives here in the Atlanta area. You know, we're looking to gain insight from the challenges and successes and the viewpoints coming from some of the leaders in our community. Randy has been an owner of Logo Included for, what is it, Randy? How many years?
Almost 10 years.
10 years, wow. Coming up fast. He also has a couple other side ventures and has always been an entrepreneur ever since I've known him. And we're excited to have him on the show and get some of his experiences. So welcome on.
Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be on the show with you guys.
So, Randy, maybe you could tell us a little bit about Logo Included and maybe a little bit about you.
All right. Well, I was in the computer hardware sales and distribution business for 15 years before we started Logo Included. So we sold all the guts inside a computer, the hard drives, memory, floppy drives, keyboards, you name it. We put PCs together and servers together. That was great in the 90s. Everybody needed a computer in the 90s, and Y2K was spectacular. And then this company called Dell came along out of Round Rock, Texas. And
took that right out from under you.
That was a hiccup in our business plan, no doubt about it. So that made the business more challenging. And at that point, I'd had enough of working for other people and decided it was time to look for our own adventure. So we started Logo Included in 2001. We're trying to stay in the technology arena and leverage our experience and our contacts in the technology business, the computer hardware business, and then we started selling USB flash drives, and then that kind of morphed into what it is today, which is we do promotional products. We put logos on people's tech items. So say you've got a company like a bank that wants to give away 10,000 flash drives at a trade show talking about a new product that they have. We'll make those flash drives for them and put their logo on them and load their data on them and everything else. So strictly technology items, flash drives, MP3 players, digital picture frames, USB mice, hubs, anything gadget related, cell phone chargers.
That's a really cool idea. You know, we've been doing at Radio X and in one of my joint ventures, Dreamland Interactive, we've been going out to trade shows and doing live remote broadcast radio. And I wonder if there aren't some applications there to put Radio X or Dreamland Interactive or the client that we are working for, if there's not some way to capitalize on what you do.
Absolutely. I mean, anywhere where you're trying to drive people to a website or drive them with some media, we've done some projects before with big companies where they put give out MP3 players with a pre-programmed message on there. One of the neatest ones was one of the big pharma companies had a trade show booth at, you know, some trade show where there's going to be 8,000 doctors. So they ordered 8,000 MP3 players, and their booth was so large, it had like eight segments to the booth. Well, there's no way. They're getting so much volume through that booth. There was no way to staff that so that the person could walk them through each stage of the booth and make sure they got the corporate message at each stage.
Right.
So what they did is they created a little line, and you started at the beginning of the line. You got your MP3 player. You got your earbuds. You plugged it in, and you went to the first booth and pushed play, and then it prompted you to go through the next sets of booths. And so as you're standing in front of that one segment of the booth, you got their exact corporate message dead on with no staff involved.
Wow.
And it walked you through all eight segments of their booth, whether it be eight different products or eight different, I don't know what the application was, from the different segments. But at the end of the road, they've gone through eight different segments of this booth, and they've gotten eight different messages, exactly what the corporation wants them to get, with no human interference, or and they did it at their own pace and everything. So that was one of the best applications I've seen from a technology product used in the marketing arena.
That is really cool. And again, to his point, the message is perfect. I mean, you're on top of it. It's delivered perfectly every time. You get that consistent message. MP3 players like that, is it cost prohibitive? I mean, what kind of money are we talking about to invest in these MP3 players?
You know, the price of memory has come down dramatically over the last, you know, 10 years. I guess when we first started selling 8-megabyte drives, you know, we were probably looking at $100, $150. Now we're selling 1-gigabyte MP3 players for, you know, $12, $13.
Wow. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. So, you know, the cost, you know, imagine them taking a person, and it was like a 30, 35-minute, you know, for all eight segments combined. Each segment was 4 minutes. So, I mean, 35 minutes, you know, for $12, there's no way you can staff somebody properly, walk them through that. So, you know, cost-wise, that was a no-brainer. So it's a great opportunity.
And when you're obviously operating in this environment, I mean, there's tons of competition from a kind of corporate giveaway thing, and there's lots of other organizations and companies out there. What makes you guys different in terms of your deliverable?
Well, our difference is we only do technology items. So the giveaway or promotional products industry, as we call it, is it's about 60-65% apparel. It's the shirts, the hats, the golf shirt, towels. You know, it's wearable stuff is about 60-65%. You know, in reality, our segment, the technology segment, is only about 5-6% of the industry. So, you know, we're really focused in what we do. Most of the players out there try to do everything. They try to sell koozies, and they try to sell hats and coffee cups and mugs and crystal, you know, award gifts and everything. We just stick to what we do. We just sell technology. We try to do that the best of anybody out there. Try to come up with new and innovative products, you know, that's cutting edge technology. So that's kind of our niche.
How do you, obviously, the servicing aspect of things and the customer service and the quickness of deliverables and the, you know, you get a small company that wants to have a few of these things, maybe a couple hundred, and you have someone else wants 20,000. How do you deal with that from a servicing perspective? I would imagine that's got to be a huge challenge.
Well, you know, some more background on the company. In 2004, we really transitioned from the computer hardware industry selling to resellers and bookstores and retail chains like Fry's and those guys. And we started focusing on the promotional products industry in 2004. At the end of 2005, it had become so successful that we decided to buy our factory in China that we were buying our goods from, or merge with them. We bought 75% of the equity in that company. And we built it specifically for this market. So we can handle an order for 50 pieces of orange USB drives with a four-color logo on it.
Wow.
That's right up our alley. Now we're still set up to handle a 20,000-piece order.
Yeah.
Because it's China, after all, and that's what everybody wants, the big order. So we're set up for that as well. But we really laid the groundwork in the beginning is we want that business. We want that smaller quantity. The odds are if they come to us and we deliver and take care of them on 50 pieces of a exact orange color, when that order comes around for 500 or 1,000 or 10,000, we're going to get first and last look at it because of our relationship and what we've done for them before. It doesn't guarantee us anything. We still have to execute, but we're in the game.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I think if we turn that business away and tell them, oh, that's not enough to deal with us, then I think that, you know, we're out of the game the next time they really need something.
Hey, John, what if people came through Biz Rocket Radio and we were able to hand them a USB with their interview on it, and it had the Biz Rocket Radio logo, or John Baker logo on it?
Yeah.
I like this.
Yeah, there's lots of applications.
Yeah.
This is sounding better all the time.
That's right. We'll have to have him on here again.
Out, will you,
let me get an order form out. We take credit cards.
We affect real business here on Biz Rocket
Radio.
That's
right. We're not messing around.
Exactly. But one of the latest technologies we're working on is driving traffic to websites. You know, everybody's print and, you know, collateral is really hard to keep up to date. Nobody's, you know, as soon as you print 10,000 of something, you go, oh, I misspelled something. Yeah. Or, oh, this person quit. He's not on my team anymore.
Yep.
Something changes. Some regulation changes. So, you know, everything's about driving people to the website to where you can keep things really accurate and, you know, the latest and greatest. So we've got some products now that are specifically tailored to launching your website. Whether it's keys, you know, a little web key that you plug in your computer, or a push button on your desktop that you can push. You know, some programs we've seen done with that are, you know, instead of printing out coupons and stuff for like a grocery chain, you just have a little thing on your desktop and you push it, you know, on Monday morning and you see that week's specials. And you can print them off on your computer, print whichever ones you want. It saves all the waste of the paper. And then they don't have to deliver it, so they're going to delivery cost, you know, whether it be mail or delivering them to the stores or what have you. So those are some other applications to where it's really economically wise to enhance technology to deliver information to people. So it could be a specific URL that your local grocery store uses, and every Monday it changes. You know, it's not on their website. If you don't have that key, you're probably not going to know that URL.
Right.
You know, those are some of the applications that we've seen as far as new technology and how to drive people to websites.
Now, you started this 10 years ago, right? Did you just buy this company and kind of develop it from there, or how did it get started?
No, actually, me and two of my coworkers from the distributor that I was working at from selling hardware, we'd been coworkers for about 12 years at that point, and we just decided to start a little LLC and work out of my house and my basement and get things rolling that way.
You worked out of your basement?
We worked out of the basement until we grew out of the basement. Then we took over one of the bedrooms upstairs. So, you know, at which time I was engaged and you know, going to be married in the next year. And that went over real well. sleeping at night, hearing boxes being made two doors down in the bedroom. But that's really, you know, that was the best way for us to get going. And we were still able to work our normal jobs. And each partner peeled off one by one. You know, rather than all three of us coming on to the books right at the beginning, that's a lot of mouths to feed and a lot of responsibility and a lot of risk involved. Whereas if you know, we kept our jobs as long as we could and did this kind of moonlighting thing, then it helped take away some of the risk and allow the company to invest money in other places rather than, you know, in our salaries and helping us pay the bills.
So you kind of developed it from the kind of base ground. Maybe a couple of you worked there and a couple of you kept the regular jobs and...
Absolutely. Actually, I kept my regular job until 2004. I kept getting promoted, so I was the odd man out. They kept offering me more money to stay where I was at, so I was like, you know, I'm not leaving yet. And then it was worked out good because I was able to still thrive at my job, and I didn't have to worry about taking any income from the company. I was able to reinvest all that money and help grow the business. So actually, the partners came off one by one. The first partner came off about six or eight months into the venture, and then the other one came off at the... in late 2003, and then I came over in 2004.
I hope my wife's not listening to this because I jumped off a cliff. and what I should have done was exactly what you did. It's a smart way to do it, isn't it?
I talk to people about it all the time that, you know, it's a lot safer way to do it. As we get older and, you know, everybody has more responsibilities, whether it be a spouse or children or family members, it could be anything. Bills just pile up or... you know, the beauty of walking off the cliff instead of jumping off the cliff is that, you know, you still got a little, you know, income and a little security there. you know, I was talking to you guys about people bring me business plans all the time. Say, if I just had $4 million, I could get this thing going.
Right, right. That's all I need.
You have got to have one heck of an idea to talk somebody out of $4 million for something that's not generating any revenue, has no history, and it, you know, it's on paper. I'm looking at one now that someone has sent me, a friend of mine, and it is $4 million, and they want, you know, and they're going into a market that's pretty saturated already, with no clients. They've got some experience in that industry. But so my advice to them was, you know, why don't we scale this back a little bit, get one client. Let's work on getting one client.
Before you ask for the $4 million.
Generating some revenue. Show me you can do it. And it's on a technology that they haven't quite developed yet. You know, fine-tune that technology on this one client. Make all your mistakes on this one client before you spend $250,000 marketing it to the world. Because you know what? It may not even work at all.
Yeah.
And then here you've dropped, you know, a year into it, you've dropped $500,000 in marketing of something that you can't deliver, or you isn't working properly, or isn't what the market wants. I'm a big proponent of gingerly walking off the cliff rather than jumping off the cliff.
Yeah. So that business plan that was sent over, you returned it with a check for, you know, $1 million, $2 million.
I actually referred them to you and Stone. I figured you guys would.
Well, Stone's got it covered. He'll take care of the full 6 million.
I'm going to tell him what you told him, because I've had people come to me with these lists. Here's all the things I think I need to do or get to go into business. And the one thing it won't have on there is a customer. So that's what you need to get into business is customers, right?
Yeah exactly. And if nothing else, it shows you where you're making mistakes, and you can fine-tune things before you go to large scale. I'm not against big investment or big, you know, a large-scale product launch or a large-scale you know, new segment of your business. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not negative to that, but you've got to have some kind of base you're working from. And that's just me. You know, I'm there. You know, there's venture capitalists and angel funding out there that you know are a lot more knowledgeable about this than I am. But from, you know, I'm a realist kind of standpoint guy, and you know, maybe these guys can talk somebody and give them $4 million. Maybe they will. But you know, how much of the company are they going to have to give up to get that $4 million? And
well, if they put it on a customized MP3 player, it might do it.
Exactly. If they bought about 10,000 of those, then we might be able to come up with some seed money. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's right. So I'm interested to hear about China, because you said you bought a business. How do you buy a business in China? I mean, how does that work?
Well, you know, one of my partners is Chinese. He's been over here about 25 years now. So that was kind of the lead-in. But we originally found our products that we were going to sell from China. And then, like I said, in 2004, we really started focusing on this promotional product business, the customized business. And by the end of 2005, it had been so successful that, you know, from a business standpoint, I looked around and I go, wow, I have a lot of eggs in this guy's basket. He's looking at me going, wow, you know, they're 99% of my business, and he's 99% of the product I sell comes from him. And I just... So we flew over and sat down, and I said, you know, I have a very basic business problem here. Is if anything happens to you, I'm done. You know, I've got real problems. So I said, we need to we have to get in bed further together, or I'm gonna have to start diversifying some of my risk among vendors. So, and he was the same way. He had, you know, we had grown really fast, and he was more of an engineer type, and it wasn't his cup of tea running a business and the cash flow issues and growing the business and the capital that was needed to really grow the business. So we were able to take that part of the business process off him and let him be an engineer and generate new products and worry about quality control and the production line and those types of things. So once we sat down and talked, it really made a lot of sense, and it made everybody a lot more comfortable going forward for us to purchase 75% of his company and then help him run the business.
So do you find the business climate, because you've obviously traveled to China quite a bit, do you find the business climate there different? Obviously it's different, but how is it different than it is here in the U.S.?
It's tremendously different, as you alluded to. The labor, obviously, is a big draw for people, even though there are lots of places in the world that has cheaper labor now. But it's not so much the cost of the labor, it's the skill of the labor and the way they work and the work ethic and the productivity that comes out of them. And then you've got the regulation and the issues over in China. Some of the stuff that we do with inks and paints and stuff, there are so many regulations it would take us 2 years to figure out how to even set up a line here in the U.S. to do what we do in China. From a, how do we dispose of the paint, and where do we buy the, you know, what type of paints are allowed to be used, and the safety equipment we would need for the employees, and all, you know, and all that. Whereas in China, they're really production based, so it's very easy. You pay the government, and they come pick up the waste. It's that simple, and then they dispose of it. So it's a burden that's off my chest. We write a check every month. It's like somebody picking up the trash.
Right.
You know, here, you know, like you take your trash to the curb. Well, we have a tank that we put our waste in, and they charge us by how much waste we have in the tank. But the government takes care of all that. You know what I mean? It's just a fee. It's a service they provide,
right,
because they know we're employing 200 people. So they're more than happy. And it's not like it's a free service, but they take the worry out of it and all that stuff. And, they, you know, from a safety standpoint with employees and everything, we have ventilated rooms for the painting, and you know, we have all the proper equipment, but there's just not the hassle,
right,
that you know, I've heard that we would have doing such a thing in the U.S. So everybody thinks it's people working in unconditioned, you know, unair conditioned 150 degree rooms,
sweatshops,
8 year olds, you know. You know, 60 Minutes finds one of these things going on in Vietnam, and I'm sure it happens a lot. But the majority of the cases are not that I have seen personally, and I've been to hundreds of facilities in China. That is not the case at all. There's plenty of eligible workers of age. We provide housing and food for our employees over there. We provide insurance,
wow,
through the government at a very, very low cost. The government wants the people to be insured. It's a young work base, so the rates are really reasonable. And it's the whole city that actually, you know, you buy into the city insurance. So, you know, they make business attractive, whereas, you know, you hear in leaders, you know, there was a big conference, and, you know, I heard the CEOs of Intel and Cisco talking about just how hard it is to run their business in the U.S. until the U.S. makes it more attractive to invest capital and develop businesses here. That's why people are going overseas. They make it easy.
Yeah.
You know, and when's the last time dealing with the government, some of these issues was easy? It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are some of the pitfalls or challenges in working in China or anywhere across the pond that you've come across?
Well, along with all that ease of making business life easier with the government, there are many, many challenges from the regulations that they have. They like to hold money for a while. So when you wire the money to China, it's not ready. You know, it may hit their account, but it's not available. It's on the government hold. The government queries the funds. When you export items, you have to claim for the rebates that are due you from when you imported them. So flash memory is an imported item. So you pay taxes on it, and then when you export it, you get a percentage of that tax back. And some items you get more back if they're trying to increase that technology being produced in China. You might get more. You might get a credit back. But getting that money out of those guys can be a real challenge.
Yeah.
And then there's the fraudulent and the corruption issues. That, you know, it's a communist country. So sometimes, you know, it is what it is, and you have to play the game with those guys, whether it be one official or one particular department or what have you. So there are many, many challenges from some of the things that they make easy from a business perspective. You have to have some Chinese nationals that know how to maneuver and go through the maze of the corruption and the bureaucracy along with that.
Going over to China, whatever this time or the last time you went, what's the biggest surprise that you had when you got to China and started experiencing the life that the Chinese live?
I always say the biggest difference between the China and the U.S. is, number one, it's just the amount of growth. I mean, everywhere you see, there's 100-story skyscrapers going up. I mean, everywhere. I mean, they build a residential compound that holds, you know, 60,000 people.
Wow.
You know, they build... You look up and there's 20 skyscrapers. Yeah, exactly.
A suburb in one building.
No. Well, I mean, it's not in one building, but there might be 20 skyscrapers identical, lined up.
Yeah.
In you know, four rows of five, all the same. And you're like, just the scale, you're like, wow, that's the biggest housing development I've ever seen. That's the biggest neighborhood in the world, you know. And they're very efficient. They're very modern. At the bottom of everyone, there's a shopping center. All the parking's underground. You know, they have their own school system. They have their own parks in the middle. Their own pools, their own, you know, the whole recreation, everything. They're very, very nice. It's just so different from what we're used to. And then the biggest thing is how industrial and commercial land property merges with residential. So you might have on the first story of a building in the right in the middle of the city. I mean, right, just like you put it in downtown Buckhead, you might have first two stories might be restaurants, and then you have a third story, which would be shopping, and then the fourth story might be a tire factory with smoke with smoke pluming out of the windows, and the fifth store might be an iron ore guy where you hear presses just pounding all day long, bang, 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 you know, making cases for a inkjet printer, you know, or just by the truckload on the fifth floor. They got these big elevators moving down. And then floors 10 through, you know, 70 are all residential, and people happily living above them with all their clothes hanging out of the window.
Wow.
And you're like, I have restaurants, shopping, a tire manufacturer, an iron ore, you know, fabrication plant, and then 6,000 people living above it. And you're like, is this really all within, you know, a tenth of a block, all in one, the same building? And you're like, unbelievable. And then the traffic is, I just try to, you know, work on my iPad or work on my iPhone when we're driving around because it's pretty.
You don't even look up, do you?
No, it's best if you don't pay any attention. But that's the difference to me is that there's no, you know, in the U.S. we have separation. We have office parks and we have residential developments and we have, rarely will you see manufacturing even in with the office space. And over there, it's just all merged together, the residential, the dining, the food, the mass production, nasty production, not just, you know, normal putting widgets together or, a sewing factory or something. I mean, no, hardcore.
It's not like a marketing company. It's a manufacturing
exactly.
plant. On.
So here forces. You've got the school bus, tractor trailers. It's just, and all the horns going all at the same time and mopeds. It's just.
Sounds like anarchy.
It is. it's crazy. But that's the biggest thing that I see when I go over. There's just how it's all merged together. And people don't see that in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong is now part of China since, you know, British gave Hong Kong back. But, you know, Britain was there for so long for so much of the development that it is separated a little bit better. You know, you have your residential zones. There might be some manufacturing, but at most you probably have just some office space in there, a marketing company or, you know, something that doesn't have production. The production's off on a different part of Hong Kong Island. And the shipping terminals are off from the major areas. So Hong Kong is more like the U.S. When people go to Hong Kong, they're like, oh, well, China, you know, it's just like New York City. Well, that's Hong Kong.
Mm.
You know, take the ferry over to Shenzhen and experience a different thing. And there are parts of Shenzhen that they're trying to develop as an office-only type situation, and they're starting to code a little bit better. But you don't have to go very far to get out of that coded area and get into the real where everything's just meshed together.
Yeah. What about the employees? You obviously have employees here, and you've got employees over there. What do you see differences in working with employees in both countries?
Well, the eagerness to work in China, I mean, their population and just the raw numbers of people, especially young people that just want a job. They want to get off the farm, and they want to learn a skill, and they want to go to work. They just beg for overtime because they want to send money back home. You know, there's so much rural land in China that most of the workers in these factories are coming from those lands, and so they want all the money they can get, and they send most of it back home to their families. So, in the U.S., it's hard to recruit younger people who have that desire and that work ethic and that really, really want to work hard.
And I'm not sending anything back to Pensacola. I'm keeping every nickel I earn.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom.
And we definitely have different goals on what we do with our money, absolutely. but the infrastructure is there for them. Busing situation's a lot easier in China than it is here. And then, you know, when you have employers providing housing and meals, that they all become a little community.
Yeah. Seems like a little compound.
It is. No, it absolutely is. It's all security and guarded. I mean, you can't get into their dorms without, you know, proper clearance and things.
They have
like
dorms.
That. Absolutely. We call them the dorms, but they are, you know, small rooms where they all live and they all share. Exactly.
Sounds like college with a paycheck.
Yeah.
That is it. I mean, and a lot of them, that's what they're looking at it as, because they're learning a skill, something that's going to propel them into life. It's very easy to figure out ones that have more skill than others, whether it be an aptitude for learning engineering or something, and you can pick those guys out or women out and send them on for further training and become great employees. And they're always, you know, loyal to you because you got them into the game and you started teaching them skills and gave them a career to go forward with.
So if you were giving advice to people in terms of starting an international type of a business, what would you say?
Oh, wow. I look back at how we did it, and we have sponsored another company in Texas in our office park and helped them get going But if you don't have a sponsor or a relationship with somebody over there, I can't imagine walking over there and going, "Hey, let's open up an office in Shenzhen."
Right.
I don't know how you could. I don't know how you could get through the red tape and know what to do when and what order, and I don't see how you could do it. So what they're called are sponsor companies, and like I said, we've sponsored a company out of Texas and helped them in our office park and get going, and referred them to the accountants to help set up the business and help them build out the stuff, build out their production facility and things like that. But you would really have to find a sponsor over there, whether it be a vendor or a partner or a firm that specializes in that.
I bet you there's a, I mean, that's probably an industry or a business, right? A business that specializes in helping you go do business in China or something?
Yeah, absolutely. But there's such a high level of fraud, such a high percentage of, you know, people.
Be careful, huh?
Yeah. Well, wire me $200,000 and I'll help you get things going, you know. Come on over and I'll show you a tract of land. So, you know, that's a big challenge in China is the fraud and dealing with vendors and dealing with people. A lot of people are really short-sighted over there. They look at you as one order, one opportunity, and they don't necessarily see the bigger picture that, hey, wow, if I do a good job on this one,
right,
there'll be another one next week, and then right, another one, and gosh, they might get bigger as time goes along. That's really not the case, and a lot of times they see, wow, how can I maximize the profit this week? And it's just a mentality from a lot of the people there that maybe there isn't the next week. Maybe there isn't going to be another order, so why? Right. Why not take advantage of this one? So,
yeah.
From that aspect, it'd be really hard to find somebody to trust and do that with. But there has to be companies that do it.
So, moving a little bit away from the China and a little bit maybe away from the company, maybe more towards you. If you're looking at your, you know, growing up and your history in the business world and going to college, you're an Auburn grad, aren't you?
Absolutely, a War Eagle.
But he overcame it. I mean, the guy's very successful, right?
Yeah, he overcame the whole Auburn education
system. Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. You guys got to be pretty excited about that.
We are very excited about going to Arizona to bring the SEC championship, their fifth straight BCS championship, the SEC conference, their fifth straight BCS championship. So hopefully we can represent well.
All right. Go Tigers. But besides all that, what do you think, what gets you up in the morning now? What's besides the kids?
Yeah.
What gets you motivated and gets you going?
It's the thrill, the business. I mean, this is a challenging, you know, operating environment we have right now. You know, I think people are, you know, waiting. A lot of people are waiting for it to get better, to return to like it was in 2008. And, you know, my belief is this is the new game. You know, you need to figure out how to play the game. You know, in 2008, they weren't, you know, in a basketball game, they weren't pressing us. They were letting us dribble the ball up the court. You know, well, now, as soon as I throw it in, you know, I'm underneath my own goal, and I've got three people around me. So now
right,
I'm being pressed. So
right,
now I've got to figure out how to break the press and move the ball down the court. And so that's the interesting part right now is how to, and it's such a head-scratcher, you know, how do you grow the business? I don't think, you know, it's really hard to find growth opportunities. It's really hard to find an opportunity worth investing in. Because there's so much risk out there, and there's so many pitfalls right now. So the challenge to me is we're playing in a new game, and how to play this game. I'm not waiting for them just to quit pressing me, because I'm not sure they're ever going to quit pressing me in our generation again. I think what we've gone through the last 3 years is a generational type wake up call, and you know, people that lived through the Great Depression, they always had that in the back of their mind, and until that generation, you know. That was a defining thing. They were always, you know, very conscious of costs and saving money and things like that. And I think our generation got away from that, and we've had a wake up call. And no matter how much we deny it, you know, they're pressing us right now.
Right.
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the press will go away and money will start falling again. But you know, I see it as being a false, you know, ideology that things are going to get easier soon. You know.
So that challenge gets you up and keeps you going.
That challenge, because you know, I feel like we have to be changing. We have to figure out how we're going to break this press. How are we going to, and then what's going to happen next? Maybe they go to they're in a 1-2-1, you know, 1-2-1-1 now, and they're going to go to a 2-1-2, or you know what I mean? Because I don't think it's going away. It's just going to change, and the challenges are going to change. And as far as competition goes, a lot of people are just the competition is a lot harder for that. For the growth or for any opportunities are out there because you know, everybody's struggling. So competition's more aggressive. The game's changed a little bit. So to me, that's the challenge. That's the fun thing right now is kind of navigating my way through that.
Good.
Good stuff. What's next for you guys? New technology? You're going to try to hit a different market? What's on the near-term horizon for you guys?
Well, we're trying to figure out how to grow this thing. We've got a lot of great relationships and a lot of great business partners that we've developed over the last 10 years. And we're really just talking to them and letting them just lead the way. What do they need help with? How can I add more value to what we're already doing? Like I said, instead of just beating my head up against the wall and keep trying to sell them the same thing, what else can we do to add value? We have branched out in China into a couple new ventures, a couple new opportunities that are not promotional products related that we're looking at, one of them being digital signage, especially point-of-purchase digital signage, kind of like we talked about the MP3 players as you go through the trade show booth and you get a corporate-specific message. We're working with point-of-purchase screens to where you get a corporate-approved message at the point of purchase, whether it be choosing a golf ball, which golf ball is best for me. Well, it's going to walk you through what's your handicap, what's your, do you spin the ball, do you need more help with your long game or your short game? And these are the type of interactive devices that we're working on right now, and we've got some big projects that have already closed, and we're trying to figure out how to leverage that market. Anything where education is needed, you don't want the guy at the sporting goods store picking out which golf ball. If I'm a golf ball manufacturer, maybe he likes a different ball. Maybe he likes maybe he's going to give them the wrong information, sell them the wrong ball, and then they're going to be frustrated with my brand because I didn't educate them on which of the seven types of golf balls I have.
Yeah.
Medical is a great one. Some pharma regulations went in place a couple of years ago that really hurt our industry because you don't see all the stuff laying around doctor's office now, pens and shirts and hats and mugs that these pharma companies used. They're not allowed to give them to doctors anymore. If it's not educated related, they can't give them. So we're trying to focus, rework our devices so that they are compliant. They are educational related. And one of those is the point of purchase, LCD screens. If you're going to buy contact lenses, that's a very complicated message. Do you really want the 16-year-old sales associate at Walgreens advising someone on which contacts they want to buy? Or would you rather have a big pharma corporate approved company message on the screen, that's interactive with them and gets them the exact message that you want them to have from a liability standpoint? Maybe the 16-year-old associate at the drugstore maybe uses a different brand.
It's kind of like that those Dr. Scholl's foot implants. I can't remember if it's Dr. Scholl's, but you go and you actually step on the thing, and it tells you, hey, this is the kind of foot you have. You should buy this one.
Absolutely. And that is one of the best ones I've ever seen because it's very specific. They've got a complicated product lineup from, I'm not a foot doctor. I don't know which one. And it really educates
try them
you.
On.
Exactly. It really educates you on which one you need. So that's one of the best ones I've ever seen, a point-of-purchase educational device that doesn't require an interface with somebody that needs to be trained or whatever. That's a perfect market for us. That's what we're trying to get into.
Perfect. Perfect. So we like to wrap up our sessions with a little piece of knowledge or advice that you can pass on or maybe give out, kind of a pay it forward type mentality. If you were talking to our listeners directly and they said, look, Brandy, what's the one thing that you'd say that we should do or that we could take away from the knowledge and experiences that you've had, what would that be?
I think it would be that, there's people out there right now that are struggling with business because the rules have changed and what have you. I think you need to stay flexible. It's important that you listen. Sometimes the business will take you where you need to go. Don't fight it. Be flexible. It's so funny. I mean, I'm involved in three companies that none of them are doing what we set out to do. We're doing a version of it, but the market really led us. Follow the path. Don't be stubborn. If 10 customers ask you for something and you don't do it right now, well, maybe you should.
Maybe you've got to figure out a way to do that.
Exactly, and that's exactly what we did in the promotional products industry. We were just trying to sell, flash drives through retail, which is a tough market, through computer resellers, through
Staples
bookstores. And everybody kept saying, I want 50 pieces green. I want 50 pieces pink with a yellow logo on it. I want 100 the shape of a water bottle. And we kept saying, no, we don't do that. Give me, you need 10,000 of something? And, it didn't take many times for me to go, we don't, but I will get back to you soon because I'm going to figure out a way to do that. And before we knew it, that had taken over our whole business.
Yeah.
So that is my thing for the same thing with the digital signage. You know, we broke in trying to sell screens to paper plants and big manufacturing facilities, screens that were waterproof and you could throw a hammer against and all this stuff. And now we're a digital signage company and focusing on the point of purchase displays.
Yeah.
You know, our first product lineup, probably the average sale price was, I don't know, $800, $900. Now our average sale price is, you know, $80 to $150.
Right.
So it's changed completely. But and the market told us where to go. We just had to listen to them. So that would be the thing is be flexible, follow the path, listen to your customers, listen to what product you have that's moving. You know, look at your product categories and see or your services that you're offering and where are you making your money? Where's your profit coming from? Maybe let's work on those a little bit more. How can we manage those more? And I know it sounds simple, but so many people, especially when they come to me with a $4 million business plan, they already have it in their mind how this business, exactly what this business is going to look like in 36 months. And the truth is, you know, I bet the biggest companies in the world rarely stay on that plan very long. The market, they let the market and their employees and their customers lay the path out, and they're flexible, they execute, and then they change the direction. So that would be my thing. Be flexible. My tip is be flexible and, you know, follow the path. A lot of times it's laid out for you. You just need to go with it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I appreciate that, Randy. Now, if any of our listeners need to get in contact with you, how do they do that?
The best way is, I guess, email. Are you guys going to put something on your site? Or
yeah, we'll have something on the site.
So businessradiox.com would be the best way to get in touch with me. Logo included, we sell primarily to U.S. distributors, exclusively to U.S. distributors. So it's real hard for an average end user to get in touch with us. So the best way to contact me would be through the businessradiox.com profile that they're going to have for me. But our company is Logo Included. We're located here in Atlanta, Georgia, and we've got an office out in Los Angeles, California as well. So that would be the best way to get hold of me.
All right. Sounds good. Stone, anything from you?
No, man. Fun stuff. I learned a lot about China. I'm kind of excited. Should we go set up radio stuff in China? Or?
Stone is like the mobile radio guy. Last week we had the lake house and then the spaceship.
Yeah, we're doing Wadao. We were going to go to the Wadao super group out there with Chris Wallace and his outfit. And now let's go with him. And
that's right, in China. I'll tell you what, you can fly over there. Okay? Yeah, I've been over there once, and oh my goodness.
I want to get about 10 hours into that 18-hour flight. Look at Stone go, you having fun yet? and see what he says. Well, you want another pack of peanuts, Stone? How are those peanuts treating you? They've got pretzels, too, if you'd like some. So.
Well, I don't fly commercial. Now, I figured you had your own jet.
Yeah, no, that doesn't work like that. And the rates are going on the commercial flying. It's getting tough, so it's expensive to go over there. So
Back in the standard cabin between
exactly.
four different guys
in the standard cabin, yeah, it's tough back
middle row back all the way back.
They're pricing the small business owner out of the business class. It used to be an option, but they're pricing us out of it. So
AirTran will go there pretty soon. You just upgrade for $15, $75.
Maybe. Yeah. Are they an official sponsor? Can I start working on them?
We're working on them.
But it has been a fun show. No joke. I've learned a lot. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
I absolutely will. I had a great time. You know, I love talking about business and the challenges that we have. There's a whole another slew of questions we could get into and things, so maybe we'll revisit again sometime. But I had a great time. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, for myself, Stone, and Alan, our board man, we thank you for listening and look forward to having you tune in again next Wednesday at 10 o'clock.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.